We all like to be rewarded, don't we? We all like to receive rewards in some way or another. It's why there's so many supermarkets and shops with loyalty cards or membership schemes of one way or another. This is my collection from my wallet of different loyalty cards. Whenever I get to a checkout and I can't find my loyalty or membership card, I always make what I think is the joke of saying I'm very loyal when I can't find the particular loyalty or membership card that I'm looking for. As yet, no one at a checkout has laughed at it, but I'm persevering. I'm loyal to that joke, if nothing else. We like to be rewarded, don't we? We like to receive rewards in one way or another. It's why so many shops have those kind of schemes, because they know it plays into something in us. Even if the benefit is very small, we are members of so many different schemes, perhaps, if you're anything like me. Gets its way into even the kind of charity sector. Even when people are actually looking for you to give and to donate, you find that there's charities out there that will kind of incentivise you to give. Sign up for a regular donation and you'll receive a free copy of this book, because they know there's a sense of needing some kind of reward and something back, even when they're actually looking for you to donate and to give. You'll receive a welcome pack containing all these exciting things if you sign up to donate regularly or make a gift over this amount. It even slips into charity and giving. We like to be rewarded. The title that I was given for this morning by John Edmonds, who put this series together, was Heavenly Reward. And we're looking at a series called You're Welcome, and it's all about our theme for this year, thinking about how we welcome and the welcome that we offer one another. But there's a danger, particularly when we come to this passage in particular that we're looking at in Matthew chapter 25, when we're thinking about something called heavenly reward, and actually with this whole series that we're doing, there's a danger in which we come to think that this is something that we earn by the things that we do. With this whole series where it thinks perhaps more about our behaviour and our conduct and our Christian living, can easily become something that helps us focus more perhaps on our works and the ways that we live, and maybe lose sight of God's grace. Because we know from passages like Ephesians chapter 2, things like this: for it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves, it is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. We know from quite famous passages like that we have been saved by grace through faith. It's not something that we have done, that we have worked to achieve. It's God's work, it's his work in us through which we have been saved. And even here in this passage, though, it goes straight on to thinking about the things that we do. For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. So this whole series, as we come to thinking about the way that we live and the things that we do, it's thinking about those good things that God has prepared for us to do, that he has made us, that he has created us and prepared good stuff for us to be doing. He saved us by grace and called us to be doing these things. So we come then to this passage in Matthew 25, and that in itself, if you take that in isolation from these other bits of scripture, can be quite challenging, because it can feel very much like Jesus is saying, the sheep, the ones who are righteous, have done all these good things. They fed the hungry, and they've clothed the naked, they've visited the sick, they've helped people in prison. And the goats, the unrighteous who are being sent away, who are on Jesus' left side, they are the ones who haven't done all of these things. And so it can be a challenging passage for us perhaps to come to. And it's why obviously we want to come to the Bible and we look at it as the whole and not just take one part of it on its own, and why it's important to start from Ephesians 2. But I also want us, as we look at this passage, to see that so much of what this passage has to say to us is about relationship with Jesus. Is about who Jesus is and what our relationship to him is like. It starts off by knowing Jesus, by knowing something of who he is. As we begin this passage from Matthew 25, verse 31, We come and we see Jesus not just as some kind of nice guy who lived a while ago, who did some nice things, who said some nice stuff, and if we want to be nice people, then we might do some of the things that he did. And he talked about loving people, and that's a nice thing to do, so we might try and love people too. That's far away from the kind of picture that this passage gives us of Jesus. Straight away as we come into it, at the beginning of verse 31, when the Son of Man comes, Jesus talking about himself, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before him. This starts off with giving us a picture of Jesus, that we might know him as the one who's going to come again in glory, the one who's going to come again in glory and sit on his glorious throne. Kings sat on their thrones when they were giving out judgment. People would come before him, cases would come before him, and the king would judge those who were coming before him. This is the scene that it's describing at the start of this passage. Jesus coming again in his glory and being the one who will judge. And who's he going to judge? All nations. All the nations represented by these flags around us, all the nations of the earth, all people, you and me and everybody else. Jesus comes in his glory, sits on his glorious throne, and will judge everyone. The very start of this passage is knowing Jesus is the one who's going to come and judge. Knowing Jesus is the one who we're going to be held accountable to. We might have freedom to do what we want and to live the way that we want and to do the things that please us. But the thing we're told here, right here, to know about Jesus, is that he's the one who we will all one day be before. And we might enjoy a lot of freedom now. But one day we'll have to give an account to him for the things that we've done and the way that we have lived our lives. And actually, when you perhaps begin to grasp that a little bit, perhaps this passage feels a little bit like less like heavenly reward and more like heavenly threat. That one day we'll have to give an account of ourselves to him. But there's more in this passage than just seeing Jesus as the one who is the judge. There's more of a relationship that we can have with him than just as judge. Verse 40, Jesus says this, "The king will reply, 'Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me.'" When Jesus talks about the things that the sheep and the goats, as they're described, these two groups of people, have or haven't done, the people that they have or haven't been cared for, he uses this word, talks about brothers and sisters of mine. There's some arguments about exactly the group of people that he's describing here, but it's probably most likely when Jesus talks about brothers and sisters, the rest of the time when we talk about brothers and sisters, that we're talking about Christians. That we're talking about people who are following Jesus. That's the people that he describes so often as his brothers and sisters. That actually the judgment that Jesus seems to be bringing out here is about how people have been treating his brothers and sisters, his followers. Particularly those who are the least of those. Particularly those who have the least, the last, the least, the struggling, the hurting, the broken, the imprisoned, the sick. And he says those quite amazing words, that what you did for them, you did for me. Jesus describes the relationship that he has with his followers, those who he calls his brothers and sisters, to be so strong, to be so tight, that actually when you do something to one of his brothers and sisters, it's as though you are doing it to Jesus. He identifies with them so much that his relationship with them is that when you do something to one of his brothers and sisters, it's as though you are doing it to him. And that's something that should transform our welcome as we think about our welcome that we might offer in so many different ways to one another, to brothers and sisters. It should be something that transforms it. Because when someone walks through the door, when someone sends you a text, when someone sends you an email, when someone phones you up, when someone's struggling, your opportunity isn't just to offer a welcome and be nice to someone who you know and someone in the life of the church or a Christian around the world, but your opportunity is to offer that welcome to Jesus himself. And that, to me, is the heavenly reward in this passage. Is that our opportunity is to do these things for Jesus himself. Because he so identifies with his brothers and sisters that caring for them is caring for him. But, of course, really that's going to depend on how we feel about Jesus. Because that's only a great and an exciting opportunity if we feel that we want to offer that kind of thing to Jesus. It's not just about knowing something about Jesus, knowing him as this one who comes to judge, this one who says he has brothers and sisters. But not just that we know Jesus, but that we have been welcomed by him. Our verse for this year is, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. The motivation and the inspiration for the welcome that we offer isn't something that comes from within us, but is the welcome that we have received, that Christ has welcomed us. And actually, all of the things that Jesus describes here, all of the things that Jesus praises people for doing or criticizes people for not having done, are all things that he has done for us in a far greater measure than we could ever do for him. He has shown us far greater welcome than we could ever show to anybody else. For I was hungry, for we were hungry, and yet we have been fed. As we gather together as the church and we share in communion, this is exactly what goes on. We come and we are fed together through the body and blood of Jesus. We share in bread and wine. We are fed through what Jesus has done on the cross, through his sacrifice for us. We receive of his grace. We're fed as we share in bread and wine. I was thirsty, and Jesus is the one who came and gave me something to drink. To the Samaritan woman at the well, Jesus said, I will give you living water, and so you will never thirst again. That's what Jesus offers us. That's what Jesus has done for me. He has offered us living water so that we will never thirst again. I was a stranger. I was so far away from God. I was trapped in my sin. And yet Jesus has welcomed me in, just like the story of the prodigal son. When the son was still far off, the father runs to him and welcomes him in. It was while I was still a sinner, while I was still a stranger and an alien to God, that he sent Jesus to die for me. Just like the son who the father welcomes back, the father welcomes him back and he clothes him. He gives him a robe and puts a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. He welcomes his back. He needed clothes and he clothed him in royal robes we don't deserve, as we often sing. We were in need and he clothed us. I was ill. I wasn't just sick, I was dying through the sickness of sin. As the father said of the son who'd returned, he was dead and now he is alive. I was dead through sin and now I am alive through Jesus Christ. I was in prison, we were held captive by our sin. We were prisoners to sin, and yet Jesus is the one who's come and through his death on the cross is able to set us free. He's broken the chains in order that we might live a life of freedom with him. Jesus has done in a far greater way for us than we could ever do for ourselves or anyone else. All these things that he asked of us to do. For we were hungry, for we were thirsty, for we were strangers, for we needed clothes, for we were ill, for we were in prison. And he is the one who has welcomed us in. This is what he's writing about when Paul says, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you. This is why Jesus can come to us and say to do these things for one another, to feed the hungry, to give the thirsty a drink, to welcome the stranger, to clothe the naked, to look after the ill, to visit the prisoner, because he's already done for us in far greater measure than we could ever do for anyone else. All of those things. We have been welcomed by him. And it's in response to the welcome that we have received, to the love that we have been shown, that we welcome others. If we seek to do it from any other motivation, it will end up coming out of selfishness or bitterness or brokenness. We'll never succeed in doing these things as Jesus asks us to do. We do it out of love for him. Not just that we know something of Jesus, but that we have been welcomed by him, that we have been shown such great love, that we might show that love to others. And the real challenge of this passage is that the test of our love for Jesus and what he's done for us isn't by how passionately we sing, or how often we turn up at church, or the religious language that we're able to use, or how good our Sunday best clothes are. The real test of how much we love Jesus, according to this passage, is how we have cared for others, particularly those who are in great need and those who are different from ourselves. That we know Jesus and have been welcomed by him And the other thing, of course, we see in this passage is that it is possible to be completely lost. It is possible to reject that welcome that Jesus offers. It's possible to be disconnected from him, and even for that to be a surprise. Verse 44 says, they will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or needing clothes or ill or in prison and did not help you? Matthew, in his Gospel, has already recorded some words of Jesus that said something very similar. Not everyone, Jesus says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. The next verse, a couple of verses later, then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. It's a relationship with him that is the key. Not just saying, Lord, Lord, not just using the right words or looking in the right way. But here, the relationship with Jesus is the key. I never knew you, he says. Away from me. It's possible to reject the welcome that Jesus offers and be so disconnected from him. And perhaps we find some of the things in this passage difficult. Perhaps we find the talk about hell, as it's described in this passage, and of people being separated in this way, something that's difficult and doesn't quite fit in sometimes with the culture today and the way that maybe we like to view things. I just want to point out one thing. In the way this is described, that someone pointed out that I found helpful. Jesus says this to the sheep. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. And just contrast that for a moment with what's said to the goats on his left. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. Jesus describes what is prepared for the righteous as what is for the sheep, as what's been prepared for them, prepared for you. But he hasn't prepared this eternal fire for anyone but the devil and his angels. God didn't create hell for anyone other than the devil and his angels. He wants everyone to be with him. But it's possible for us to so disconnect from him, to reject him, and to walk away. And so it should lead us to want to know Jesus. To want to appreciate again the welcome that he's offered us, that we might welcome others and follow Jesus in the things that he asks of us to do. And what is it that he wants us to be doing? What is it that Jesus would like to see us doing when he returns, when he comes in his glory, as we've read about? Well, it strikes me that actually the things that Jesus asks of us to do are very similar to the things that we see Jesus himself doing. Near the beginning of Luke's Gospel, Luke chapter 4, he records Jesus quoting from the book of Isaiah, and it's what's often considered to be kind of Jesus' mission statement, like his manifesto. This is saying what I'm going to be about. And here the similarities to the things we've been talking about. Luke chapter 4. The Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim freedom to the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour. And he asks us to go and do the kind of things that he was doing, to walk in the way that he walked, particularly for the least of those amongst us. When he talks about the hungry and the thirsty and those needing clothes, it's ways of describing quite simply some of the most basic needs that we have. To actually look after and care for people and the most basic needs that people have and where those are struggling to meet just the simple things of life. That we might help and care for one another, where actually some of those things, just the simplest of needs, we might meet for one another. And for those who maybe are newer to the church or have never heard about it, we have a way in which we seek to do some of this within our church life for one another. We have what we call the PIN Fund, which is the Person in Need Fund. And we set aside a bit of our money from our budget each year in the life of the church. And sometimes people give gifts specifically to go to that fund. And we use that where we become aware that there's people particularly in need for some of the just the basic needs of life, and where we can help and support one another. Sometimes people become aware of a particular need of someone in the life of the church, and they might want to give them a gift, and they might want to do that anonymously. And so they might come and chat with me or Elsie or one of the other elders as a way of being able to give and support someone who maybe is struggling with some of the most basic needs in life, and a way we can support one another. That we can be generous to each other in the way that we welcome and care for one another. Jesus says we're to welcome the stranger. That actually what it really means to show hospitality to one another is to welcome those who we don't know so well. That's what real biblical hospitality is about. It's about welcoming people who we don't know. It's not just having someone around for lunch. It's welcoming the stranger, those who we don't know well, those particularly who are different from us. And building upon what John was talking about last year, we recognise we want to grow in our relationships with one another, in the relationships as we grow to be a church that reflects more of the nations of this town. And that will happen more and more as we actually build relationships with one another, with those who are different from ourselves, as we learn and grow through more of understanding our different backgrounds and cultures and nationalities and church backgrounds and experiences and the things we can learn and benefit from and enjoy from one another. It requires us to welcome the stranger and show hospitality to one another. Great things can happen just as we share food with each other, with those we don't know so well. Jesus calls us here to care for those who are sick, for people who are at a particular point of crisis in their life. For those who don't know, I had a holiday that wasn't just after Easter. My son Caleb, who was 7, we went away on holiday down to the south coast, somewhere near Hastings. And the day after we arrived there, Caleb hadn't been very well, and he'd been awake all through the night with pain in his stomach. And then we got up, we didn't really get up. The next morning, we thought this is a bit too much now, and took him into hospital. And it turned out he had appendicitis and had to have his appendix removed. And I spent the next 5 days in hospital with Caleb in Hastings. And it actually gave me something of a new perspective about that whole kind of situation. I think it's probably the longest that I've ever been in hospital. And it was, in some sense, beneficial because it wasn't me that needed to be in hospital. So I kind of got off easily with that one, I suppose. But it gave me a new perspective on partly how isolating that experience can be. And there's people here who've gone through much longer stints in hospital and much longer illnesses. But also the difference that it makes when someone just gets in touch. When someone just sends you a text and asks how things are, or says that they're praying for you, or just small bits of contact with others to know support from people. And how much of a difference actually just a small thing makes. And I've probably been a bit British, and the negative side of a British culture that says, oh, well, I don't want to hassle them and bother them. They've got a lot going on, and I'm sure it's very difficult, and, you know, I wouldn't want to kind of cause any trouble. So I'll just, you know, I know that there'll be other people who are, I'm sure, were sorting things out. And actually, to get over, well, for me, over some of that Britishness, and actually be willing to just get in touch and ask, and actually realise how much that means in some of those situations where people are ill and struggling and going through hard times. Jesus calls us to care for those who are in prison. And Helen's already led us really well in thinking about the persecuted church and our brothers and sisters who are imprisoned or who are persecuted and suffering for their faith. It's very difficult to go and visit them. Actually, oddly enough, there are sometimes the opportunities to go and do that. But we can be more, so much more informed than often we are. And we can pray. And if you look at organisations like Christian Solidarity Worldwide, CSW, or Open Doors, that Helen referred to earlier, you'll find all sorts of information. You'll find opportunities if you want to. You can write to Christians who are in prison or have been released from prison, or the families of those whose maybe the husband's been sent to prison, and you can write to the wives or to the children of those who are suffering and struggling, the impact of the persecuted church. And even in the foyer at the moment, we've got a petition that you can sign for a petition for the situation of believers in Pakistan. And you could sign that today as we seek to support our brothers and sisters who are suffering. This is something that's more than just about one another in these four walls. But this is about all those outside our brothers and sisters around the world, but also much wider than that. The priority, I think, comes within this passage about Jesus' brothers and sisters, but it also spills out to the wider world too. Galatians chapter 6 puts it the other way around. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. We're called to do those good to all people, that our welcome should be something that spills out into the world around us. That kind of welcome and hospitality and care for those who are in need and struggle with the basic needs of their life shouldn't just be something that's within here. It shouldn't just be that we become a nicer club and we have a Slough Baptist Church membership card to kind of, you know, welcome you in at the door or whatever it might be, and it's kind of a rewarding group to be part of. The welcome that we show for one another should be something that spills out into the world. That our love for one another would be something that reveals to people the love of God at work in us. That we would be known by the way that we love one another. But also it would spill out. That this kind of radical welcome and hospitality and generosity and care would be something that we show to the world around us. And as Helen already reminded us as we prayed, there is so much need around us. There's things that we do in the life of the church already. But you'll know the people around you, your neighbours in your workplace, at your school, in the clubs that you're a part of, in the groups that you go to. You'll know the people who are strangers, who are lonely, who are ill, who are struggling to meet their basic needs. You know the people that you walk past on the high street who are homeless, who are struggling. Our welcome is something that isn't just about in this building, but it's something that spills out as we seek to do good to all. And ultimately, that we might welcome others as Christ has welcomed us for the glory of God. That he would be made known, that he would be glorified through all these things that we do. So that we might know Jesus. That we might know who he is as the one who's going to come and judge. That we might know him who identifies so strongly with his brothers and sisters, that welcoming them is the same as doing it to him. That we might recognise how much he has done for us, the welcome that we have been offered, and offer something of that love and that welcome to the world around us. And that we might follow him in imitating the things that he has done and the things that he calls us to do, that the world might know him and he might be glorified in it. Let's pray together.